Next case is 05-243, James Arrington versus Daimler Chrysler. Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Your Honor. For the record, Thomas Wilson here on behalf of plaintiff appellant James Arrington in this workers' compensation related matter. At this time, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for a rebuttal.
Watch your time there.
Thank you, Your Honor. Having accepted this case, this court has the ability to shape jury trials in the state of Ohio in the future. It has the ability to determine whether or not technology is going to be a tool that is used for jury trials, or whether, in fact, technology is going to be the master, allowing for jury trials to become nothing more than a sterilized event, a made-for-TV movie. Mr. Arrington has some questions that he would like to have answered. Mr. Arrington would like something from this court. What he would like is the ability at his trial to walk up to a witness chair, sit down, look eight of his peers in the eyes, and say to them, "This is my story." He also wants the ability to have those eight people, those eight neighbors of his, look back at him and decide whether or not he's telling the truth, to decide whether or not his credibility is sufficient to have a verdict come down in his favor. That's what this case is all about. Mr. Arrington also questions why, because he has the disease of asbestosis, which is a recognized disease under 41-23-68-AA, that his case is different from other pulmonary diseases also recognized under 41-23.68, such as black lung. There are no mandatory jury trial or video trials in black lung cases in Summit County. There are none in the other recognized pulmonary type cases, such as silicosis, firemen's inhalation of smoke. Those do not have mandatory videotape jury trials. Borreliosis, another recognized disease. They're all pulmonary case, pulmonary type diseases, all recognized under the statute, but nowhere are there jury trials required to be videotaped, only in the asbestos video cases.
Counsel, the underlying case that your client has, the issue is what? The issue to be tried to the jury.
The issue is the right to participate in the workers' compensation fund.
So the issue is relates to whether or not the disease is work related.
Well, one of the issues is it work related, but the first and foremost issue is whether or not there is a disease. Okay, and that requires certain types of medical information that have to be presented. And one of the issues that was never addressed by the trial court and is it's a face violation of Superintendent's Rule 13B.
What I'm getting at is jury trials in this specialized area have a very limited issue that the jury considers, correct?
They have the same limited type issue that, say, for example, a criminal jury would consider, which is guilty or innocent. This one is participate or not participate. But that very specific end result is made up of many components. For example, the trial court in this case said, we are going to broad brush every asbestos-related workers' compensation case in Summit County. We're not going to look at any of the differences as required under Superintendent's Rule 13B. There's a difference, for example, Your Honors, whether a client has the medical disease of asbestosis, whether he has the medical disease of lung cancer related to asbestos exposure, whether that lung cancer is based upon smoking or non-smoking, or whether down at this end of the spectrum it's mesothelioma. The medical experts that are required for each of those different specialized cases are different. A pulmonologist who may be required to testify for an asbestotic case is not the pathologist who is required to testify in a lung cancer case.
But in the medical part of it, it is, which is the right word, it is customary to have videotape testimony because it's hard to get the docs into court, is it not?
Now, Your Honor, having tried quite a few of these cases, I can tell you there are times when we bring the doctors in via video, but, and I emphasize the but, and trial, there are times, just as many times, when I want the expert to come in live, because
it's an important part for that expert to testify live. You'd always prefer to have the doctor
and
there.
We often do, Your Honor, I agree.
But sometimes you just can't get them.
Sometimes you can't. But this is more than an expert, Your Honor. This is talking about the plaintiff. I always can get the plaintiff in the courtroom.
Right. I understand.
And the plaintiff is precluded from testifying live. Here's what the plaintiff ends up having to do, Your Honors. He has to go under this broad brush statute or broad brush rule. He has to go in, give testimony on the video. He then comes in, and on his day of court, he walks up to the bench, he sits down. The jury comes in, and then the jury is played his testimony while he's sitting next to the video monitor.
Is the jury, does the court explain to them why this is being done?
Your Honor, that's, having listened to the jury charge, I don't have an answer for that question. I honestly don't remember. Part of the problem we also had, which shows the prejudice to the plaintiff that's required under Fantozzi and also required under Superintendent's 13 Rule 13b-2, the video charge, the charge was put on video, okay? That video then was allowed to be taken out of the courtroom, like checked out of the library, and then I was taken, and I had to take the video back, put it into a recorder, and listen and watch the judge give the video charge. I asked, Your Honor, may I have a transcript? Answer, no. I asked, well, can we have the written material? Answer, no. So we were required to look at the video, and as this court all knows, jury charges are lengthy, and they're very fact-specific in going back to your question, Your Honor. Because it's not only fact-specific in regard to the experts and the disease, it's also fact-specific. For example, in this case, there are multiple employers. This isn't one employer.
Does the judge prepare a separate jury instruction for each case, or is it?
No,
is
it was a blanket jury instruction.
A blanket jury instruction.
It was a blanket jury instruction, and I literally had to sit there with the video, you know, back and forth. The judge would say a word, and I'd have to listen to it. I'd replay it. The judge, and then decide whether or not I liked it. And if I didn't like it, I'd have to replay it again to write the objection down. And I asked, Record 264, the request for written transcript of the video jury charge is overruled.
So
that's
counsel,
part of the prejudice.
Counsel, at trial then, your client, or the plaintiff, is sitting at the table and the jury is viewing the video of his. And when it comes time for the charge to the jury, the judge is presumably on the bench and another video is played with the charge while the judge is just sitting on the bench.
Or the judge doesn't have to be there. That's part of what he ruled.
So
he
the
could,
judge leaves the room.
I don't know. He could or he might not. What he said was there'd be a bailiff there because that was one of our objections. I mean, one of our original objections was he wanted four jurors only. And we said, no, you
can't
do that.
And this is being done simply because of the sheer volume of the asbestosis cases.
Well, that's the allegation, Your Honor, but when you look at the other counties in the state of Ohio, Cuyahoga, Youngstown, you know, Mahoning, Warren, Trumbull County, this isn't happening. For example,
That's what I'm pointing out, that this particular county is doing it because they say there's too many cases, yet other counties have just as many or more, and they're
and
trying
they are,
them.
and they are effectively using conventional mechanisms to obtain jury results. In the time that this whole matter has been sitting here, you know, there's not been a single jury trial that's been handled in Summit County in a workers' comp asbestos case. Not a single one. Been tried to verdict. Cuyahoga County, the same thing. This year alone, we did nearly 50 trials. 50 trials to verdict.
What is the rule that you want us to put out in this case, Mr. Wilson? And doesn't this really just concern discretionary determinations by a trial court?
No, Your Honor, because I believe that, well, the rule of law that I'd like the court is that mandatory videotape trials are precluded over the objection of the parties. I would like that. I would also like this court to...
Does that require us then to modify or overrule Fantozzi?
No, Your Honor, because Fantozzi had, besides talking about Superintendent's Rule, at that time 12B, 13B, Fantozzi also put in an additional requirement that wasn't met in the instant case, when that is the requirement that that no cognizable prejudice will be suffered by the parties. In this case, the unrebutted testimony in the record, unrebutted, its evidence, its affidavit evidence, was put in the record that said, these are all the problems that we have. Everyone ignored that. The trial court in its order doesn't talk about the prejudice to the parties. It ignored it. Why? Because from day one, in Summit County, there was going to be, in asbestos workers' compensation cases, there was going to be videotaped trials. And this is what the judge said in a hearing transcript early on in the case, after we filed certain objections. And it's at records at page 17. And if any of you are under the delusion that this isn't going to happen by video, then you better disabuse yourself of it, because it is. And if I'm wrong, the Supreme Court can tell me so, but this is the way it's going to go. And the street talk would be, that's the way it's coming down. And you're right, Your Honor, no matter what we did, no matter what case, what information we presented to the court, it has never...
Counsel, I assume the record here does not include any statistics on how many of these jury trials by video have produced verdicts for plaintiffs?
That is correct, Your Honor. The number that I gave was purely matters involving only the firm that I, clients of my firm. For example, the 50 that were tried to verdict in Cuyahoga County doesn't have any other firms that have asbestos-related workers' comp. Those are just mine. For example, in Stark County in 2004, there were 8 cases that got tried to jury. But you know what happened after those 8 cases got tried to jury? 150 cases were settled. They were settled. The entire docket was wiped clean.
Most of these cases are settled, as you well know better than I. Certainly.
Your Honor, we're trying cases in Cuyahoga, Warren, and Youngstown to the tune of 2 or 3 a week now, every week, week after week.
Counsel,
and we're doing it, and those are all mostly with judges appointed by this court.
Counsel, I'm looking to how we craft anything that is that's workable. Initially, I'm horrified by the thought of the injured party or the claimant having to sit there and watch oneself when they're available to testify. But as I explored with you earlier, there are some witnesses who you just can't get, or it is enormously inconvenient to get. So how would you envision the rule should be that the plaintiff can present as much of their case as they deem necessary or prefer to by videotape, and that the defendant likewise can do that? In other words, what I'm looking at is you're dealing with a big company, and the maybe the case involves some degree of expert testimony as to what was in the plant or what did this worker work with. What could they have possibly been exposed to? It would not be unreasonable for that company to want to videotape that instead of having to respond to your subpoena for X, Y, and Z experts week after week to appear in the Summit County courtroom. So how do we resolve this in a fashion that you would deem fair to your client and your client's interests, and still do not expose the other side to unwanted and burdensome traipsing to the courthouse on a weekly basis when there are matters that their experts could be videotaped on, their engineers, whoever has the records that might be pertinent?
Your Honor, first of all, the rule should include something that says the plaintiff, who has the burden of proof, should be allowed to tell a story live to that panel of jurors over there. That should be part of it in and of itself. The second part is there are other rules out there, Your Honor, in regard to unavailability of witnesses under the rules of evidence that allow in. For example, in Cuyahoga County, there's a local rule that says you can't bring the doctors in because they're too busy. And that has a basis. That has a basis in the Ohio rules of evidence unavailability issues. So we wouldn't concern ourselves with that part. But it's the blanket exception. It's the blanket requirement that says, and from beginning to the end.
But how do we craft that and not interfere with those other rules? You want the plaintiff to be able to testify. B, you think the judge should have to give the charge from the bench?
I would agree to that.
Are those?
I would.
The two minimums?
Those would be the minimums. I would also, there are other factual witnesses, Your Honor, not experts, but in every one of these cases, we bring in coworkers because we have the burden to show that the asbestos was there. That's part of our case. And you know, Your Honor, sometimes we win these and sometimes we lose.
Isn't this your strongest argument, though, that this violates the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution? Here we have all over the state other claimants being able to try their cases live. Here in Summit County, the judge orders videotape.
Your Honor, I agree with that.
It appears to me that that's certainly a violation of equal protection.
I agree with that 100%,
everyone should be treated the same.
I believe all the plaintiffs with all diseases should be treated the same. I believe asbestos-related workers' comp diseases should be treated the same as a fireman who has who's been exposed to smoke inhalation.
Go ahead.
I have one question. In reviewing the Court of Appeals review of Judge Milligan's journal entry here, one of the compelling reasons, and the second requirement is there must be a compelling reason for trial by videotape. According to Fantozzi, an analysis, the judge says that being videotaped, that professional testimony was indigenous, and that's pretty much an agreed upon fact here, but that large numbers of jurors would be required and that the court facilities were limited. How does videotaping minimize the number of jurors that are required?
I don't think it does.
Isn't there one jury per trial?
Your Honor, unless the rules have changed since the last time I did a trial, that's what should happen. And in fact, what we often find in trying these cases is jurors who are left over from prior cases come on for the next one, and we don't even want that because they've been tainted. So how could we have one jury or one set of juries looking at more than one case? And would that in and of itself be a due process deprivation? I agree with that. I don't know how it could happen.
Wasn't one of the arguments or one of the points I saw someplace was that these trials that are videotaped trials are a little more efficient because they can move along without interruption and so forth, that which is what's one of the studies apparently shows. Doesn't that partly answer the question of the resources of the jurors? If the trials move more quickly, more expeditiously, that obviously it saves jurors time and you can have same set of jurors hearing more cases, deciding more cases.
I guess the problem I have with that, Your Honor, is an expeditious trial, is an efficient trial sufficient to overcome constitutional arguments? Is it enough to stop a plaintiff for having his day in court when he is the person that has to have the burden of proof? It isn't the defendant, and there isn't efficiency here. The cases in Cuyahoga County, Trumbull and Warren, they're being efficient. They're being handled in a different way, but they're being handled efficiently.
Well,
there's discovery issues. They're combined. A whole mechanism of things that have been put into play that makes the process more efficient.
hasn't happened in Summit County.
Should we be at, all concerned in whatever rule we craft here in the concern about the number of plaintiffs who are waiting for their cases to be heard? Cuyahoga County, there are 40,000 cases, as you know, usually, generally, I get reports every month pending, even though they dispose of a great number of cases, there are so many more coming. If I'm a plaintiff waiting to have my case heard, do I have some interest in, or does the system have some interest in moving cases as expeditiously, fairly, but expeditiously as it can? Isn't that what Judge Milligan was attempting to do here? Whether he did it correctly or not, we'll have to decide. But is that something we should be concerned about or not?
Well, Your Honor, that has to be put in the basis of a narrowly tailored result, because that's what happens when we're looking at the strict scrutiny issues here, because it's a fundamental right. It has to be narrowly tailored, and if there are other alternatives that are equally as efficient, those have to be addressed first. For example, out in Warren and in Trumbull and Mahoning counties, what they do is they set five cases for Monday. On Monday, they come along. As soon as that first case is done, whether it's Monday afternoon or Tuesday, they set the second case. They set the third case right after that. There is another efficient mechanism out there that doesn't preclude and step on constitutional rights of individuals who have a burden of proof. So perhaps efficiency may be there, but there are other ways more narrowly tailored that would be available.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson.
Thank
Mr.
you very
Wilson,
much, Your Honor.
Mr. Wilson, let me ask you. Yeah. Mr. Wilson, I want to ask you another question. In these video trials conducted by Judge Milligan, are the lawyers present in the courtroom live picking the jury?
Yes.
And then the entire trial tape is put in for the jury to watch start to finish?
With the exception of opening arguments. Jury selection, opening arguments, and final arguments are the parts that have been removed from the jury selection. Other than that, it's all evidence is put in via video.
And are you objecting to the evidence from experts, either scientific or medical, being done by video?
To be very clear, Your Honor, I am objecting to the mandatory use of experts, either medical or otherwise, being required to be put on video.
So your argument is more than just the fact that your client isn't permitted to testify live to the jury. It is even with respect to the medical.
That is correct, Your Honor. As the person with the burden of proof, it would seem that the trial attorney should have the ability to determine what mechanism he puts his case on to fulfill that burden of proof.
So what you're really saying is that the party with the burden of proof should be able to dictate all aspects of the presentation of evidence to the jury, and the trial court, who maybe in response to what the chief was saying, just has to sort of go along, and the judge isn't the one who's going to determine the conduct of it, but rather the plaintiff's counsel.
No, I think, Your Honor, that broad statement I would disagree with, because the plaintiff and the trial attorney on behalf of the plaintiff, he's also under certain constrictions that the trial court always has. I mean, for example, time-wise, you know, he can say, you know, you've gone too long. Hurry it up, counselor. Everyone's here. Hurry it up, counselor. Okay, so there are constrictions. What we're asking for, Justice, is the same treatment. The same way that you and I are interacting right here, I want my witnesses to be able to interact with the jury. The same way we're looking at each other in the eye today, and the same way that I'm looking at over here. That's all I'm asking for. And when you have a video, that goes away. The witness doesn't get a chance to look at you and say, you guys are fading over here. Okay, so I'm going to come over here and do something. I lose that. And every
You're losing your time, too, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You've answered the question,
Thank
Mr.
You.
Wilson.
I apologize. Thank you, Your Honor, for the questions.
Ms. Porter.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. I'm Elise Porter here on behalf of the Bureau of Workers' Compensation. I am dividing my time between my presentation and presentation by Counsel Hilkert on behalf of co-appellee Daimler Chrysler. The question here is not whether or not it would be nice for a plaintiff to be able to present his evidence in a certain way. The question here is whether it implicates a constitutional right. Does a plaintiff have a constitutional right, particularly in a workers' compensation case, to dictate how every piece of evidence is going to be presented to a jury?
Well, more basic than that, does a plaintiff have the right to a jury trial, a live jury trial?
A plaintiff has a right to a jury trial. First of all, let me point out, Your Honor, that in a workers' compensation case, a claimant has a right to a jury trial only because the General Assembly has given him one. He does not have a constitutional right to a jury trial in a workers' compensation case. He only has a statutory
right. Well, the General Assembly could pass a law that states that all these cases would be handled by the same way as they are in Summit County.
That's true. They
could. That would be acceptable.
For workers' compensation, they absolutely
that would,
could.
And that
That's
would,
correct.
Well, I don't know if it would pass constitutional muster, but that issue would be for another day.
But this court has held that the right to trial in workers' compensation case is that given by the General Assembly and no other. There's no constitutional route for that. But in this case, I would say, first of all, even if they have a right to a jury trial, a claimant's in workers' compensation cases, the right to a jury trial is intact here. You still have a jury trial. A jury still looks at all the evidence, makes all the factual determinations. There are two standards by which you can look at that. This court has said that if a jury decides all the facts, the right to a jury trial is intact. Clearly, the jury does here. They look at all the evidence. They decide all the facts. The judge isn't taking away any decisions from the jury. If you look at federal court, the U.S. Supreme Court has said that the right to a jury trial is intact if there's no discernible difference in outcomes. Now, this court doesn't have to accept that standard, but if you do and you look at the studies that have been done about videotape trials, there is apparently no discernible difference between the outcomes in trials that are done by videotape and the outcomes of trials that are done live.
Does this come down to whether or not the court is abusing its discretion in precluding one witness or another from testifying?
I think it does, Your Honor. I think this is an abuse of discretion case. I don't think it's the grand constitutional case that my opponent tries to make it out here. First of all of the objections that Mr. Arrington has to videotape trials are purely hypothetical in this case. He did not go through with a videotape trial, so he can't point to something that happened during that trial that somehow prejudiced his client. It's all speculative. Well, the jury might not get like this, or the jury might not do this, or this might or might not happen.
Well, his case has been dismissed.
That's correct. His case has been dismissed because he showed up twice without a videotape when he was ordered to.
Do you find it's an abuse of discretion that a claimant is present in court on trial date wishing to try his case, and the court said, because you didn't do it by video, I'm dismissing your case, and you are now precluded from recovery?
Do you
find that to be an abuse of discretion?
No, not in this case, Your Honor. I don't.
So a court can put on an order on a procedural, nothing with respect to the substance, but
correct,
failure to comply with a procedural format as a basis to dismiss a substantive claim, and it doesn't constitute an abuse.
I think in this particular situation that is correct, Your Honor, yes. If it was a procedural format that the judge had determined, as Judge Milligan did in this case, that was to make these 300 cases more efficiently and more expeditiously tried, if he lets Mr. Arrington come in and present his evidence live, then all the rest of them are going to, and the entire reason for doing videotape trial goes out the window.
Counsel, in what manner is it more efficiently tried? Does the judge have three trials going on in separate courtrooms same time?
I think that's part of it. I think that there are two main ways in which videotaping these 300 trials is more efficient than doing them live. The first is that the main time waster, at least from a juror's point of view in a trial, is taken away, and that is all the objections, all the sidebar conferences, all the breaks, and all that is completely taken away. That's taken care of behind the scenes by the counsel and the judge. The judge rules on the objections. They splice the tape together, and so all of those breaks and those interruptions are gone. So each trial is going to, from a simply sheer number of minutes, is going to be shorter because all those objections are taken out. And then secondly, as you say, I believe Judge Milligan intended to have at least two or three trials going on at the same time. Now, that doesn't take away from the fact that the judge and the jury and the counsel will be present.
Has he actually done that?
No, he hasn't. They actually haven't done any of these trials because of this case. He's put the cases in abeyance, waiting to see whether or not he doesn't want to try 100 of them and find out that he's violated some rule. So he's waiting for the outcome of this case. It's my understanding.
If I understand, the jury question here is the right to participate. We're not talking about damages or...
Correct.
So it's a single issue that the jury has to decide.
That's correct. And the other thing that is my understanding is that the vast majority, if not all of these cases, are in fact asbestosis. We're not talking about... black lung disease, we're not talking about, you know, anything else. We're talking about exposure to silica and asbestos in the vast majority of these cases at Daimler Chrysler, which is the primary defendant in this case.
So, Counselor, are these trials now going on the standard way without the video?
In Summit County, no.
There's no trials going on in Summit County.
That's
for
my
Judge
understanding.
Milligan.
That's my understanding, that they're waiting to see whether the video format is acceptable.
And in lieu of proceeding and disposing of cases in the traditional way, they've just put a stay on all of these cases.
That's my understanding. That's my understanding, Your Honor.
I assume there are cases being settled, I would assume.
I'm sure some of them are being settled. There's no doubt.
They're not sitting idle. There are cases that can settle or are being settled.
A large number of workers' compensation cases, as a matter of routine, are often settled. The other disturbing thing about giving the plaintiff, and there was some discussion about this earlier, giving the plaintiff or giving the claimant in a workers' compensation case the right to control how the evidence is put on, is this, and that is, not only would he have the right to testify himself, perhaps, not only would he take away from the judge the right to say, this is how my trial is going to take place, but does that give the claimant then the right to tell the defendant, you will bring all your witnesses live too, because I want to cross-examine them live. I want them to sit there in front of the jury live while I make them squirm on cross-examination. And then does that give the defendant also the right to insist that the plaintiff bring all his witnesses live so that he can make his witnesses squirm on cross-examination?
Well, counsel, that was the question that I probed, and it just thinking out loud about a reasonable solution to this, because your idea of a reasonable solution is what Judge Milligan proposed, but if we don't share that view, it would seem perhaps that control of that issue ought to be with each party in terms of who you put on, and if the opposing party wants to subpoena or put on the testimony of someone who is an employee of the other party, that we don't allow control of that to the, in this case, the plaintiff.
The question, I think, Your Honor, here, the real question that needs to be answered here is not whether or not that's preferable or not whether or not it would be better for a particular plaintiff to be able to, or defendant, to be able to subpoena witnesses from the other side. The question is, are we violating anyone's constitutional rights by saying, in this particular case, in these particular circumstances, with all these many thousands of asbestosis cases, are we violating someone's constitutional rights by saying, you know, for simplicity and for to make it to speed it up, we're going to present evidence in a particular way. Let me just point out that if you had a not a workers' compensation but a regular tort case that were a class action, the plaintiffs in those cases would have far less rights, if you want to call them rights, to present evidence. They have to submit their rights to one or two named plaintiffs who will try their cases, and they then have to agree to abide by what somebody else's lawyer presented, somebody else's witnesses with somebody else's evidence.
So they have the option to opt out of that process?
Most of the time, there are opt-out types of class actions.
Let's get to maybe an initial analysis here. Why are courts in existence? Why do we have these type of systems? We're not here for the convenience of the judges, and we're not here for the convenience of the staff of the courts. We're a public servant. And when you start eroding, I think, and that's what it appears that this is a, because we have the technology to do it. If we didn't have the technology, you know, we wouldn't obviously be here. But doesn't this kind of get at the very fundamental reasons for the existence of the courts as servants?
I don't think so, Your Honor. The studies have shown that videotape trials are just as effective, that the jurors can make decisions just as well, can determine whether or not someone is telling the truth just as well as they can with a live trial. In this case, the danger that you run is that justice delayed is justice denied. You have hundreds and hundreds of claimants waiting in line. If they have to wait months and years for their cases to be resolved, because some of the guys who came first want to try their cases live, then you're subverting their rights. So it's a balancing in this case whether you whether or not or what mechanism a court is going to use in order to efficiently and effectively try all these cases.
Ms. Porter, who pays for the videotape?
In this case, the court was able to obtain free videotaping from the University of Akron.
So the plaintiff wasn't put to an additional burden to have to go to a television studio or where someplace to have this done.
In fact, he's actually probably at less of a burden in this case than he would be in the ordinary workers' comp case, where at his own expense, he would probably have to videotape the testimony of his own expert witnesses, because very routinely the experts are brought in by videotape.
And here, then is the expectation that the plaintiff's counsel, defense counsel, and the videotaped witness all go to the University of Akron?
Yes.
and conduct the proceedings there, and
that's
then that
correct.
Tape is brought back and shown to the judge, objections are ruled on, and it's sort of put in the can.
That's correct. They have a studio set aside, and
are these done only in the participation cases for workers' comp? Are all 300 just participation cases?
That's my understanding. Yes, that's my understanding. That the only issue is participation in all of these cases.
Thank you.
One other thing I would like to point out, and that is the actual wording of Superintendent's Rule 13B. It says, a trial judge may order the recording of all or a portion of testimony or evidence on videotape in an appropriate case. In order to make the exception that the plaintiff, Mr. Arrington, wants to make in this case, you would have to either overrule or change Superintendent's Rule 13B, which allows a judge to do what Judge Milligan did here, as long as he goes through the Fantozzi factors and has a compelling reason for doing a case by videotape. Neither Rule 40 nor Rule 13B makes any exception. It says evidence may be presented by videotape. It doesn't say evidence of the defendant. It doesn't say expert witnesses. It doesn't make any of those distinctions. It says any and all evidence may be presented by videotape, and Rule 13B says the judge may order that any and all evidence be presented by videotape. I see that my time is
Thank you, Ms. Porter.
Thank you.
Mr. Hilkert.
Thank Thank you, Your Honors. I will try to be brief since I think some of the time has gone over.
Yes, I think we didn't put the red light on for Mrs.
I believe we did not, Your Honor. So I will try to be brief.
Okay.
I would like to go to Justice O'Donnell's questions and answer them differently than was answered by the other side. Is this case about abuse of discretion? Yes. They would have made a different ruling than the trial judge. They did, but they appealed that issue to the Ninth District Court of Appeals. The Ninth District found against them there was no abuse of discretion, and they have not appealed the abuse of discretion issue to this court. They're only coming here on a constitutional argument that somehow, even if the real argument is they would have liked the judge to rule otherwise, but now they've dressed it up as a constitutional argument. So the first, I say yes to their first question. Is this really an abuse of discretion claim? Yes, they've lost it and they've not appealed it. Second, because they've switched the issue from abuse of discretion, if they get their way, would you have to overrule Fantozzi? Yes. You'd have to take everything after the word unless in Fantozzi, and you'd have to overrule it if they were to prevail, because in Fantozzi, you said that if the trial judge followed the rule, and he did here, and they have not appealed that, that would be a compelling interest. So my answer to the second question of Judge O'Donnell's questions is, yes, you'd have to overrule Fantozzi. For them to get their third way, you'd have to ignore the Ninth District. They found that the judge, on page 14, addressed all of the issues in Fantozzi, including cognizable prejudice. He didn't specifically use the magic words, but he addressed all the factors. He addressed it appropriately under the rule. There's only one other point I would like to make, and it really goes to maybe a little bit to Judge Pfeiffer's point, and that is we all would like to control the courtroom. In fact, I would prefer sometimes when I'm trying cases to be able to tell the trial judge what to do. I seldom try. I never get away with it if I try. But what they really want to do is have unfettered restriction, because they have the burden of proof, to try this case as they deem fit, which would mean the kind of problems that you're talking about. They could subpoena any witness from any corporation, make them tromp down there for 300 times. They could make any more than one witness come unless the trial judge restricts their power. Now, the trial judge has the power to restrict their power. To do that, and I guess that's the whole reason why trial judges have power, period. In this case, it does streamline things to have the testimony, because the key testimony is expert testimony. And what's always underlying the expert testimony and the key time is the objections about, are the facts in evidence upon which the expert will opine? In other words, you always put on a witness generally. Sometimes if you put those experts in out of order, it kind of, the judge has to wait, and you ask it hypothetically. But it really streamlines things to have what, now, before this expert testifies about this case, because you can put on his qualifications for 300 cases, is what was the exposure? If you have that testimony, the judge can rule on the objections. It doesn't change. It does streamline the cases. There's a reason why the objections will go smoothly on these cases, because expert testimony is critical, and often expert testimony in these kind of cases is given. There is simply nothing wrong with the rule. They don't like the way it came out in this case. It may favor them, it may not favor them. The jury studies are pretty benign on that. And frankly, I'm not sure this does favor a defendant. It is a fair process. It's kind of like if you told me in this case, we're going to submit this on the brief, so I didn't get up here to eye to eye. Does that mean I didn't get a fair appeal? I don't think it does. You know, routinely in summary judgment motions, I don't get to go up and tell the judge what I really think eye to eye. But that doesn't mean there's no fairness. And I'd say the same thing here. When he says he gets to come up here and talk to you eye to eye, I'd submit to you, if you made us submit this to you on the briefs, we get a fair hearing. There's fairness. It may not be what I desire, but it's fair.
Thank you, Mr. Hilkert. Mr. Wilson, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'm going to start you out to use your 30 seconds. There, in the Bureau of Workers' Comp brief, as you know, there there's reference to a number of studies. The ones that are most persuasive to me are the studies of the jurors in videotape cases, who say that, some of them even say they prefer the videotape trial because they're more efficient. They use the jurors' time well, and it seems to me that in today's world, when just intuitively, when so many people receive so much of their information, entertainment, and whatever else they do from a screen, that your speculation, I guess, that is what you have here, that your client would somehow be prejudiced by a videotaped trial, it seems to me it's the evidence, or the, at least the surveys that we have available that are cited, and you've cited one or two also, seem to indicate that there's really no prejudice here to a plaintiff in your case where the jury is given videotape instead of live testimony.
Your Honor, let me answer it this way. Let's look at the record that's before this court. Law review articles, they're not part of the record. There were 50 plus pages of affidavit evidence that were supplied to the trial court. And in opposition to that, there was nothing. Those evidence was not objected to by Daimler or by the state of Ohio. And in fact, just so the court knows, Daimler Chrysler, they objected at the trial court level to the videotape trials. Now they're here saying they're fine. The state of Ohio didn't say anything. They didn't care one way or another. Now they're saying you have to do it.
We have to write a rule of law here, and whatever they said back when doesn't really matter, I guess. We have to write a rule of law. We have to decide whether the trial judge here has the authority to do what he did, or to do part of what he did, or none of what he did, or not. And I guess to me, the fact that there are surveys of actual jurors who say, I prefer a videotape trial, seems to indicate to me that there may be, that goes to the fairness issue, I guess.
In Your Honor, in Fantozzi, there were also surveys and law review articles that said the opposite way. But that's why we don't have learned treatises as evidence in Ohio, because we don't get a chance to deal with those. What we do have in the record here is the affidavit of Attorney Thomas Bevan, who actually did the videotaping, and he put forth the prejudice and the problems in the specifics in this case. And that is the only thing before the court in this record.
Mr. Wilson, why did you abandon your abuse of discretion argument? You took to the Ninth District, but didn't bring it here.
Well, first of all, the Ninth District did something that I, quite frankly, shocked me, which was it made a ruling that said, a sua sponte ruling without briefing, without oral arguments, and without the issue even being before it, that there's no constitutional right to a jury trial in workers' compensation cases. That came out of the blue. It was never argued. It was never part of anything. But the court made that issue. And that issue then took the abuse of discretion issue, and it put it into the strict scrutiny analysis, the compelling needs, and the narrowly tailored results that are required. I don't think this court needs to change any of the rules, because in this case, the court didn't comply with Superintendent's Rule 13b-2. It didn't talk about the nature of the actions. Everyone keeps saying these cases are all one big old case. I mean, for example, counsel there represents Daimler Chrysler and Continental Tile. They're different cases that are all before the court that these videos are on. Also, for example, Babcock and Wilcox is a different defendant. They made the stuff. So you have different facts.
Let me just interrupt you to ask you, I assume that you do not agree with Mr. Hilkert that we would need to overrule Fantozzi if we were to hold for you?
No, not at all, because in this court, their record is devoid of any evidence that the trial court looked at the prejudice to the parties, and the other affidavit showed the prejudice to the parties. So I believe
that changes the issue before us. If it's just a matter of whether the trial judge followed the four steps in Fantozzi, then that's a different case than all the other things we've been talking about.
Well,
we just have to look to see whether he did or not.
It's the trial court following it or the trial court paying lip service to it. There are different things, Your Honor. Substantive issues require substantive hearings, evidentiary issues if that's what he wants to do. But remember, you know, the court asked how many, you know, why are these cases not going forward? Well, for the last year, first of all, they starting December 2nd with live trials. They're going forward December 2nd. We already got them set, teed up for go. But the court hasn't done anything, not because it was stayed, because it was only stayed from when the appellate court issued its decision until now. The rest of the time, it just never got around to them.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, and I apologize for taking up too much time.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.